Widows and Children Left Behind, 30 May 2011. On 27 April in Kabul, Afghanistan, 8 U.S. Air Force airmen were shot and killed in the same action while serving our great nation and our Air Force. On that same day, 3 other Americans from our sister services also died in other actions around Afghanistan. These 8 airmen, 2 soldiers, and 1 Marine who died that day in Afghanistan are American heroes who were doing their duty to protect our country while trying to help the Afghan people. They gave the ultimate sacrifice for all of us. Those service members who gave their lives that one day in April were also individuals who left behind hundreds of people who loved and respected them. I was fortunate enough to know 3 of the 8 airmen. One was a member of the Academy Class of 1999 when I was Commandant at the Academy. One worked for me at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama, in our Commander's Action Group. And the 3rd had been one of my instructor pilots while flying T-1s at Randolph Air Force Base, Texas. I was honored to attend memorial services for 2 of those who died that day, one at Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, and the other in the Cadet Chapel at the Academy. Both ceremonies, which I am sure represented those held all over the country for the others killed that cold day in April, were professionally accomplished with tenderness. All the people who attended were sad but proud of the lives these great airmen had led. One of the most touching moments at one of the funerals was when the flag of our great nation was presented to the widow. She let out a cry of sadness that cut straight into everyone's heart, and then the missing man formation flew overhead with such a great roar. There was not a dry eye in the crowd. At the receptions following the funerals, we all talked about these great Americans. We reminisced and told stories about these airmen whose lives had ended so abruptly. As the food was served after the Academy Memorial, I noticed the little 7-year-old daughter of my former cadet who had grown up to fly F-16s and had become a husband and a father. His daughter, dressed in her Sunday best, was sitting all alone in the corner of the room playing with a small toy. She looked so small and all alone, but was deeply engrossed in her game. She had read a beautiful prayer at the funeral service, and everyone in the chapel sat and listened to her read with great pride and sadness. As I watched her, I realized that she did not know how her whole life had changed because of the events that cold, dark day halfway around the world in Afghanistan. She would never again be able to talk to her daddy. He would never be able to tuck her into bed at night. Forevermore, for the rest of her life, when asked about her father, she will have to say that he died fighting for us in Afghanistan. At the other memorial service at Langley, I was honored to present the Purple Heart to the widow of my Deputy Commander's Action Group Chief at Maxwell. He was somewhat older since he was enlisted before he became an officer. As I presented the medal to his widow, also an Air Force officer who had served overseas in harm's way, I saw before me her son who was born just a month before his father was killed. This young baby who bears the name of his father will never know or be held by that father who loved him very much. This young baby will know his dad only by the stories that others who knew his father will tell him in the future. We all have a responsibility and duty to celebrate the lives of our airmen, soldiers, sailors, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen who have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our nation. However, we also must remember that for every one of them we celebrate, they each left behind moms, dads, wives, husbands, and many, many children. In the years to come, please take the time to help those who are left behind. It is the ultimate way to remember those who have sacrificed so much for us all. Leaders, Stress, and People of Faith. 19 July 2011. Recently, I was at a military base when 2 Air Force chaplains invited me to join them for lunch. We had a nice conversation on many subjects to include stories about leaders they had met over the years. One of the chaplains had just returned from his 3rd tour in Afghanistan, where he worked with the Army. The brigade he was assigned to was responsible for 18 forward operating bases, FOBs. During his year-long tour, he experienced many great examples of leadership in very stressful combat situations. However, one example made a particularly lasting impression on him. Late in his Afghanistan tour, he was scheduled to forward deploy to an FOB. As the troops were preparing to board the helicopters to an FOB that had recently been under attack, several soldiers asked the chaplain if he could lead them in a prayer. A lieutenant colonel happened to be with the group, and the chaplain, who was a captain, thought as a common courtesy he should ask the senior officer for permission to say a prayer for the troops about to enter combat. The lieutenant colonel replied to the chaplain that it would not be necessary, and walked away. The chaplain followed the senior officer's guidance and did not lead the men in prayer. This story touched me. The senior leader's own spiritual basis is irrelevant. He could have been Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, atheist, or agnostic. It does not matter. What bothers me is that the leader appears to have ignored the spiritual needs of his troops. True leaders who have a mission to accomplish, especially in stressful situations, must take into account how different people under their command react during those stressful situations. They must get out of their own heads and into others. They must know that different people need different types of reassurance. For many of the people they lead, faith plays a large part in their lives and affects how they react in times of stress. Our government recognizes the importance of free exercise of religion in the military as guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution, and so employs chaplains specifically to assist commanders in discharging their leadership duties. In fact, DoD Directive 1304.19, Appointment of Chaplains, states, "Within the military, commanders are required to provide comprehensive religious support to all authorized individuals within their areas of responsibility." This leader lost a golden opportunity to show his troops that he cared so much about the mission and the people under his command that he respected their spiritual needs as they went into battle. The way he handled the situation left the chaplain, and I am sure the soldiers who asked for the prayer, focused not on the mission at hand, but on his refusal to let a prayer be said. He also lost an opportunity to stand up for the Constitution and our freedoms that the military fights so hard to protect. To be truly effective leaders, we must respect the diverse people we lead. Each one of them is different, and that makes the units of our armed forces the strongest in the world today. We must be true to our own beliefs, but as leaders, we also have a responsibility to the people we are sending in harm's way. Life's experiences, luggage or baggage? 28 November 2011. Recently, I was invited to speak at the U.S. Air Force Academy's Class of 2013 Commitment Night Dinner. Commitment Night is usually scheduled the day the third classmen, sophomores, return to the academy and become second classmen, juniors. Up to the very moment they begin their junior year academics, they can resign from the academy and owe no commitment to the Air Force. However, once they start junior academic classes, they are committed for the next 7 years, 2 as a cadet and 5 as an officer in the U.S. military. The night before the presentation, I could not sleep and tossed and turned thinking about what I was going to say to the 1,000-plus newly minted second classmen. At 2 a.m., I suddenly remembered an old suitcase that had many of my cadet papers in it. The suitcase was buried beneath piles of clothes in our closet and had not been opened in years. I got up and scrounged around in the closet until I found the 35-year-old beat-up brown suitcase. Unfortunately, it was locked and I had no idea where the keys were. The next morning, I took the dilapidated suitcase to our building custodian, who was a retired Chief Master Sergeant, and he had it open in about 5 minutes. Chiefs continue to make things happen, even in retirement. As I rummaged through the suitcase and found many of my old cadet papers, waves of nostalgia came over me. In the suitcase were copies of my appointment to the academy from 1969 and my silver-colored class name tag that was placed outside my cadet room and identified the rooms I lived in over the 4 years I was a cadet. There was a Form 10 I got for signing in late one Christmas and a copy of the cadet punishment I received for the infraction. There were also copies of all my grades, including the 3 F's I earned and the letters from the academic board giving me a second chance to graduate from the academy. I also found a faded Dear John letter from an old girlfriend. Finally, in the bottom of the suitcase was my commission as a second lieutenant. The suitcase contained 4 years of my life experiences, and not all of them were good. That night, as I stood in front of the class of 2013 to give my presentation, I told them the story about the suitcase and dramatically opened it and displayed the contents in front of them. I explained that 4 years of mementos, both the good and the not so good, were in there. I told them how the contents of the suitcase had helped shape my entire life, and that I could have used the contents as luggage that would help propel me on my life's journey, or as baggage that would hold me back. You see, life's experiences, like my bad grades, could have taught me that I was not as smart as the rest of my classmates and that I would always be behind. Instead, those momentary setbacks taught me to never give up and that lifelong learning can help you achieve just about anything, including becoming a university president. The quality of your contributions to our armed forces and the nation as an officer, non-commissioned officer, or civilian is not determined so much by your individual successes or failures as it is by what you learn on the journey. It matters what you learn from both your good and bad life experiences. You should use them as a positive springboard into your incredible future. Your life experiences can either hold you back as baggage or help you along the journey as luggage. It is totally up to you. Passing the baton of service to the next generation. 4 June, 2012. On 7 May, a friend and classmate, retired Lieutenant Colonel Doug Dick, passed away after a 6-year battle with cancer. Doug was commissioned in 1973 after graduating from the Air Force Academy and earned a Master of Business Administration degree from UCLA. Following pilot training at Craig Air Force Base, Alabama, he flew KC-135s and later served as a staff officer at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Ohio, and Andrews Air Force Base, Maryland. After 20 years of service, he retired, but continued to serve others as an elementary school teacher and principal in California. During this entire time, Beverly, his wife of almost 39 years, was by his side, including those very tough 6 years Doug fought to stay alive. Bev was there during the radiation treatments, the chemotherapy, and the many surgeries. The Dick family held a memorial service in California, where Doug had served as an elementary school principal for the last 9 years. A week later, a graveside service, attended by 7 of his classmates, was held at the Air Force Academy's cemetery. The chaplain said all the appropriate things, but it is hard to express the totality of a person's life that makes such a difference in our Air Force and to thousands of young children as an elementary school teacher and principal. Also, it is hard to find the words that truly tell how he inspired all those around him during his 6-year battle with the cancer. The day of the solemn internment ceremony at the Academy was also the Academy Class of 2013's Ring Dance Day. My wife Leslie and I had been invited to attend the dance because our class of 1973 had been designated as 2013's legacy class. When Bev heard that Leslie and I were going to the 2013 ring dance that very night, she asked if she could also attend. She explained that almost 40 years ago to the day, she was Doug's date to attend our class's ring dance, and that it represented the real beginning of their shared service in our Air Force. That night, Leslie, Bev, and I got dressed up in our Sunday best and drove to the Academy to attend the class of 2013's big night, the night they were awarded their class rings. We arrived to the site of more than 2,000 cadets and their dates, eagerly anticipating a memorable evening. The women were young and beautiful, and the men were young and handsome in their formal attire. The cadets had set up a World War II United Service Organization, USO, theme for the evening that included reenactors dressed in period uniforms, military jeeps, and trucks. The Air Force Academy band played nostalgic period songs, including tunes from Frank Sinatra. After the rings were presented to the class and the cadets were beaming with pride, I watched Bev's reaction. From time to time, I could see the tears well up in her eyes as she reflected back on her time as Doug's date some 40 years ago. You see, on that special evening long ago, Doug and Bev had their whole lives together ahead of them, just as the class of 2013 now has their lives ahead of them. We thought we were immortal back then, just as they do now. As the three of us watched the cadets and their dates get into the spirit of the evening and begin to dance, Bev reminisced about all the fun and challenges that Doug and she had had during their 20 years together in the Air Force. She talked about all the places they had lived and the friends that they had made. As the evening came to a close, I too reflected on Doug and Bev and thought about our friendship and our service together. Over the years, we've been fortunate in so many ways. We had the honor to serve our nation and form lasting friendships. I also thought about how fortunate the American public is. It is fortunate because there is a new generation represented by the class of 2013 who is continuing the great tradition of service to the nation. The class rings the cadets were awarded that night are a symbol of passing the baton of service from one generation of airmen and spouses to another. I also know that not only the class of 2013, but all our men and women around the globe serving their country are taking that baton and will never let it drop. It made me feel good to know that the United States of America is in such good hands. When we left the dance, I thought Doug would have been proud. Part 5, Other Articles. Linking Resource Allocation to Performance Management and Strategic Planning. An Air Force Challenge by Major General Stephen R. Lorenz, Lieutenant Colonel James A. Hubert, and Major Keith H. Maxwell. A version of this article was published as Linking Resource Allocation to Performance Management and Strategic Planning, an Air Force Challenge, in the Aerospace Power Journal 25, No. 4, Winter 2001. It was written before 11 September 2001 when General Lorenz was the USAFE XP and resources were very tight, just as today. Abstract. As a service, the Air Force fights much better than it buys things. In fact, our service, the world's most powerful and capable Air Force, would probably fail quickly as a business corporation. We must do better, and this article raises some thought-provoking ideas about how to improve. In late 2000, the service chiefs testified before Congress that the U.S. military required upwards of $100 billion per year of additional spending, a 30% increase, to maintain readiness and modernize the force. But the recent tax cut, a slow economy, and spending increases needed for non-military priorities make a 30% increase in defense spending unlikely. Without the needed funds, the military will face many difficult decisions concerning allocation of the remaining resources. The question is, and always has been, what is the best way to allocate those limited resources? The approach to allocating resources throughout the DoD at the beginning of the 21st century has several deficiencies. It doesn't provide connections from where we are, performance, to where we want to go, strategy, and to how we get there, resources. In addition, the process identifies shortfalls, but not the sources to pay for them. It rewards advocates who are most adept at articulating increases in spending, but sometimes punishes programs that can produce savings. Even worse, it lacks fundamental measures of value on which to base decisions. Eliminating these deficiencies may not solve the shortfall in resources, but it can ensure that we spend the money we have more wisely. The key to enabling Air Force leaders to make better resource decisions lies in implementing three major changes in the way we do business. These three management functions must work in unison to ensure consistent direction. First, we must link resource allocation to performance management and strategic planning. Second, we need a process that is simple, transparent, and reproducible. It must be simple enough to be implemented quickly and improved upon. It must be transparent to identify the trade-offs and provide incentives for cost reduction. And it must be reproducible through a structured planning framework that relates capability to cost. Third, we must deliver the best value to the warfighter over time and with the resources available. This requires measuring Air Force capabilities and relating them to resources and operational effectiveness for the near, mid, and long terms. Such changes are within reach. However, getting there requires a cultural change. The Air Force management processes currently in place provide little incentive to reduce costs and only limited accountability for those costs. General Gregory S. Martin, commander of U.S. Air Forces in Europe, USAFE, recently observed that the only way we're going to get anywhere in the Air Force today is to develop the tools and performance measures which will allow our people to have control and accountability for their resource and mission performance. And then we can push decisions hard and fast to the lowest level possible. That's the only way we'll really make major progress in the future. The Air Force has recognized the need for change and is making the transition. Under the leadership of F. Witten Peters, the former Secretary of the Air Force, and General Michael E. Ryan, the former Chief of Staff, Headquarters Air Force created a team to re-engineer the Air Force Resource Allocation Process, AFRAP or AFRAP. Led by Major General Danny A. Hogan, the AFRAP team recommended a capabilities-based approach for allocating resources. As a result, Headquarters Air Force chose a new approach for building the budget for fiscal year 2003, FY03, as an initial step to implementing the AFRAP recommendations. Each major command received a top-line dollar amount along with a direction to present a balanced capabilities-based input to the amended Program Objective Memorandum, the POM, for FY03. The USAFE team responded by developing a Resource Allocation Model, RAM or RAM, that produced a balanced program and at the same time provided tremendous insight into the command's capabilities. The purpose here was not to wave the USAFE flag, but to use its experience as a case study. The USAFE RAM not only works for an operations and maintenance command, but also offers promise toward improving resource allocation for the entire Air Force. We're on a journey. Throughout history, military spending has been based on available resources that the citizens of a country were willing to spend in peacetime and war. At the macro level, we won the Cold War by engaging in a long-term expenditure of resources while maintaining a large standing military. Today, with our vision of global vigilance, reach, and power, significant technological advantages have changed this equation. Vigilance has progressed from scouts and spies taking days or weeks to provide information to satellites and remotely piloted aircraft producing results in minutes. Reach has progressed from the walking pace of horse-drawn wagons to moving millions of ton miles per day, thousands of tons halfway around the world every day. Technological advances in precision and stealth have significantly changed the nature of power in battle from using numerous large munitions to destroy a target to using fewer, more precise weapons to achieve desired effects. Beginning with Operation Desert Storm and progressing further during the air war over Serbia under the leadership of General John P. Jumper, then commander of USAFE, the goal has now become effects-based operations. Technology has enabled us to pick and choose which of the enemy's centers of gravity to affect and to strike them with crippling speed. In the past, military spending drove the pace of technology. Militaries were both technology and resource limited. Over time, technology became profitable enough so that the private sector now takes the lead in many areas. As a result, we are faced with more technological choices than we can pursue with our available resources. Being resource-constrained puts a premium on planning that is compounded by a rapid increase in system complexity. Automation and computers have resulted in systems of systems interdependent with other systems of systems. For example, satellite navigation, radio communications, and precision weapons and aircraft form complex systems of systems used to perform many attack missions. In the late 1950s and early 1960s, Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara and his whiz kids responded to the increasing difficulty in allocating resources with the Planning, Programming, and Budgeting System, PPBS. Until that time, each department received fiscal spending limits along with direction on how to spend the resources. Today, the major force programs and associated program elements provide the PPBS framework. Each program element is programmed with funds for 5 to 6 years in advance of the current budget. DoD went from little involvement in how the services spent their resources to detailed programmatic insight. At the time of PPBS development, the military planning system was considered the best ever. but we have since realized that military planning has two broad categories, operational planning and force planning. Although military operational planning and the associated logistical planning have proven extremely capable, force planning has never been highly developed. Even today, the Quadrennial Defense Review, the QDR, is part of an informal process used by the DoD to establish force structure. In 1993, Congress passed the Government Performance and Results Act, which requires government agencies to take responsibility for effectively allocating and expending resources through strategic planning and performance management. It also spawned the National Partnership for Reinventing Government, which, over the last 8 years, has fostered numerous studies, experiments, and reforms in government planning and management. In response to the Government Performance and Results Act, the DoD published its performance plan and captured its strategic plan through the QDR. Until recently, DoD and Air Force reforms have failed to address the key deficiencies in the PPBS process. In 2000, the AFRAP Process Reengineering Team developed a capabilities-based approach for resource allocation, reviewing PPBS and the related processes in place to establish requirements, make acquisition decisions, manage execution, and perform analysis. The recommendations included significant enhancements to the planning portion of the PPBS by combining programming and budgeting and adding execution management. The fundamental key to implementing AFRAP is the development of an Air Force capabilities framework to tie the elements of a resource allocation together and serve as a basis for making decisions. Once the capability relationships are established, the AFRAP solution develops numerical capability objectives and projects them over time. These objectives are validated through the rest of the process by planning the capability solutions and associated resources over an 18-year time frame. Finally, accounting and performance management systems provide feedback directly to the capabilities assessment in order to judge progress. But we have miles to go. The DoD and the Air Force have transformed in many ways recently, but until AFRAP, neither adequately addressed the overarching issue of affordability. As a result, we still don't really know whether we're spending our resources effectively and efficiently. A recent acquisition reform effort first identified affordability as the missing link. In 1995, Dr. Paul J. Kaminsky, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology, created an initiative called Cost as an Independent Variable. A team formed with the objective of treating cost as importantly as performance concluded that the key lay in establishing affordable cost targets for acquisition reforms. Since one can define affordable only in relation to the total budget, the solution lies not in acquisition reform, but improving the resource allocation process. Our entire culture focuses on stovepipe portions of resource allocation, producing a system that sometimes encourages self-serving resource allocation behaviors instead of a cross-functional capabilities approach. The root cause of this behavior within our process is that we manage by shortfall. Dr. James G. Roach, Secretary of the Air Force, said, "Given the demands on the forces, the demands for situational awareness and a great deal of technology, you can't do the stovepipe game the way you used to." In our current process, we direct the participants to identify their shortfalls and bring them to the table. The result is a process designed to spend more money. Those who are successful in funding their shortfalls are the winners. In addition, since everything we do in the military is very important, life or death issues, cutting back or canceling a program is extremely hard. The process of managing by shortfall provides no information on where we can afford to make those cuts. A lack of information increases the impact of opinions. In other words, personalities fill the vacuum. Management by shortfall also leads to a tremendously inefficient process for resource allocation. Because individual shortfalls tend to differ each year, the majority of the information needed by the process must be generated anew. Also contributing to this busy work is the fact that the relative priority of the shortfalls changes as well. Adding a 30-50% turnover in personnel every year to these conditions has the potential for disaster. Ultimately, we're trying to determine how much of each capability to invest in relation to maintaining readiness of a force we have. But how can we do this without knowing the relative value of each capability? All the new business practices coming out of for-profit industry could help the Air Force if it wasn't for one detail. We don't make a profit. As Secretary Roach has said, we recognize this is not a business. We don't have a product as an open market. All tough business decisions are based on the relative value of the choices. The new process improvements coming from the commercial sector are designed to help industry's leaders find a balance between short-term profitability and sustained health of the business. Without profit as a value measure, the military must develop standards of value to improve resource allocation. Building a balanced program. In August 2000, USAFE began creating its RAM in response to the Air Staff's direction to develop a balanced, capabilities-based input to the amended POM for FY03. USAFE's approach entailed dividing the initial top line into groups of capability by assigning each program element to a cross-functional capabilities group. Formation of the groups was based on the relationships between the command's mission essential tasks and goals, with a scope of responsibility defined by the synergies between the products of these tasks, the relationships of the command's goals, and efforts to minimize the resources that cross group boundaries. Because USAFE is an operations and maintenance command, management of day-to-day resources drove the definition of capability groups. The command created five groups: Information Superiority, Aerospace Operations, Logistics Support and Infrastructure, People, and Medical, tasked with assessing the capability provided by each program element and developing a balanced capability within the assigned top line. Each group also had to provide information for USAFE's leadership to balance resources across the groups. A simple rating system facilitated comparisons among diverse capabilities. Each program element monitor was tasked to quantify the capability provided by his or her program element. The maximum usable and minimum acceptable capabilities were defined and assigned to scores of 1.00 and 0.70, respectively. Each monitor was also tasked to assign a dollar amount to the maximum and minimum capabilities and define what the resources would purchase. Once the scale was established, the monitor was then tasked to assign a capability rating to the initial top line. Although in many cases data were not available to assign a truly objective rating, each program element monitor had to defend his or her assessment under the scrutiny of peers and to the group. Although the capability ratings provided a means for portraying the health of each program, they did not form the basis for decision making. Balancing resources within a group or between groups is a process of making trades, taking from one program to help another. To facilitate balancing resources, program element monitors were tasked to identify trade-ups and trade-offs of capability with the associated resources for their programs. In this way, the group could compare the value of a given trade-up for one program with a trade-off for another, and develop an understanding of where the balance lay. Each group identified trades that achieved improved balance across its programs and then prioritized trade-ups and trade-offs for the group as a whole. The groups presented this information to the USAFE leadership, who used it to balance capabilities and resources among the groups. Assuming that the overall command is capable of performing its mission beyond the bare minimum, the goal of making trades was to ensure that each element of capability had enough resources to earn a rating greater than 0.70. This simple methodology resulted in vastly improved understanding of the capabilities and needs within the command. During the trading process, over $50 million moved among programs to correct imbalances. This amount represented only 2% of the command's total resources, but the movement represented 65% of those resources within USAFE's control, indicating how unbalanced the program had become without meaningful participation from the major commands. Implementing this process also highlighted several improvements needed within USAFE, along with information the command required from the Air Force to improve the balance further. The command used these lessons to make improvements for the next cycle. Doing it again, only better. One key to successfully implementing a process change is to include continual process improvement in the design. A good example of pre-planned improvement comes from software developers as they actually define processes. In the software industry, the incremental approach for continual improvement is called spiral development, where spiral includes the development and fielding of operational code. The first spiral might field 60% of the desired functions, with succeeding spirals learning from the previous one and fielding increased functionality. In this light, USAFE's RAM for the amended POM of FY03 is Spiral 1, and the command's approach for the POM of FY04 is Spiral 2. The improved RAM/Spiral 2 is the result of lessons learned during the FY03 amended POM and the desire to tie the model to strategic planning and performance management. One lesson learned was that managing 5 groups requires too much manpower from headquarters. In addition, several changes to the group structure were needed to align complementary capabilities, resulting in 3 groups: Command and Control, Aerospace Operations and Logistics, and People and Infrastructure. The realignment added logistics to aerospace operations where it is needed most. It also put medical and people together with the infrastructure that supports them and operations. Another lesson was simply that more time, more training, and a more rigorous process were needed to better implement USAFE's RAM. Following the submission of the amended POM for FY03, the process was refined, with detailed worksheets provided to the program element monitors. They were tasked with defining the capabilities and supporting measures for each of their programs during the summer of 2001 in advance of the command's effort to balance resources. These definitions were documented and available for continual improvement during each cycle of the process. In addition, USAFE held a capabilities workshop with Air Force Materiel Command personnel who were involved in performance-based budgeting. The workshop also received support from the Air Force Studies and Analysis Agency, which shared techniques for assessing programs and tying their performance to higher-level capabilities. A major change implemented for Spiral 2 came from aligning the processes for strategic planning and performance management with USAFE's RAM. During a 2-day workshop in March 2001, the command's senior leaders created the integrated management construct for the USAFE strategic vision process, intended to define where USAFE is through performance management, where it wants to go through strategic planning, and how it is going to get there through resource allocation. The integrated management construct links the 3 process elements and ties them directly to resources, links capabilities to resources by defining the command's total mission capability within 3 capability areas, and then breaks these 3 capabilities into 14 sub-elements defined as new mission essential task of the command. Assigning each program element to a mission essential task aligns all command resources with the capabilities. The construct aligns strategic planning and resource allocation by identifying a command goal for each of the 3 capability areas. One achieves linkage between performance management and resource allocation by aligning the performance measures directly to the mission essential tasks. The result is a simple framework for aligning strategic planning and performance management with resource allocation. In addition to aligning resources to take USAFE from where it is to where it wants to go, the new construct will directly improve the resource allocation process. Dividing the capability groups into 14 mission essential tasks increase the fidelity for making trades. The new capability groups and their mission essential tasks used in Spiral 2 align the command's 124 program elements. The approach for the FY04 POM involves balancing the resources within each program element, balancing the program elements assigned to each mission essential task, and then balancing those tasks within each group. The approach is simple, but experience during Spiral 1 proved that establishing capability measures and requirements is challenging. Few programs have useful measures of what is expected from the resources allocated. Comparing the health of each program element and its contribution to total capability requires measures of that capability that cascade down to the program element level. Another significant change during Spiral 2 involves integrating the Wing's financial and manpower planning into USAFE's RAM. The Wings were tasked to create a capabilities-based financial plan for FY02. The groups review the results of the plan along with manpower assessments to refine their understanding of command capabilities. For FY03, the Wings are using Spiral 2 of the RAM to develop an improved capabilities-based financial plan and manpower assessment. Each subsequent Spiral will repeat between Wings and Command Headquarters to develop affordable standards of performance across the command. Those standards will improve USAFE's ability to provide balanced inputs to the Air Force's POM. The biggest change needed for full implementation of USAFE's RAM will not occur until Spiral 3 or beyond and must come from implementation of AFRAP. The required balance among capabilities within the command ultimately depends on having an Air Force definition of the relative value of each capability. As an operations and maintenance command, USAFE receives forces based on higher-level decisions on what capability each weapons system should have, how many systems to purchase, and whether to place them in theater or deploy them from the continental United States. Implicit in these decisions are value judgments based on each system's contribution to national security. An operations and maintenance command has neither the resources nor the information to make such judgments. For this reason, USAFE is working to define what is required from the Air Force to enable the command's resource allocation. Application to the Air Force. Development of an Air Force RAM is consistent with the direction being taken by AFRAP and would enable the Air Force to balance its resources based on capabilities. Building an Air Force RAM requires three crucial steps. Dividing the resources among capabilities, determining the value of those capabilities, and implementing a process to balance them over time. Dividing our resources in a meaningful way requires development of a planning framework to categorize capabilities. Setting the values for those capabilities demands analysis coupled with continual process improvement, and balancing our capabilities over time requires adding another dimension to the RAM. Henry Ford taught us that managing anything requires breaking it down into definable pieces. The key lies in making the pieces meaningful and useful for resource allocation. Over the last 20 years, the DoD, the Joint Staff, and the Air Force have developed many excellent planning frameworks. These frameworks were developed for many different purposes, but not specifically for resource allocation. Consequently, they don't include all resources, adequately address support functions, or provide distinct categories meaningful to operations. These characteristics are fairly easy to achieve, but none of the existing planning frameworks has them all. Existing Planning Frameworks, U.S. DoD Joint Planning Frameworks, 13 Title 10 functions, 2 DoD goals, 8 tasks in the Universal Joint Task List, 6 elements in Joint Vision 2020, 12 areas for Joint Warfighting Capabilities Assessment, 8 areas for the Joint Monthly Readiness Review. Air Force Planning Frameworks. 3 aspects of the vision, 6 core competencies, 7 Air Force tasks, 14 critical future capabilities, 6 mission areas and concepts of operations, CONOPS 2020, 7 elements and 5 capabilities in the strategic concept, 4 elements in the Expeditionary Aerospace Forces construct, 7 focus areas in the Vision Force, and 3 Air Force goals. Since the purpose of the framework is to allocate resources, one must include all resources. Existing frameworks for visions or concepts of operations address operational functions, but they leave out the significant peacetime roles assigned by Title 10 United States Code. Balancing only a part of the budget will fail to provide the information that decision makers need. The Air Force's core competencies provide an excellent list of the service's unique functions, but the fact that they are unique keeps them from being complete. Dividing the whole into manageable pieces is particularly important. Joint and Air Force task lists provide definition for operational tasks, but combine all Title 10 functions under a single category. Title 10 breaks Organize, Train, and Equip into 13 functions, showing that greater detail is required to describe the roles. However, Title 10 does not address the operational roles of our forces. Our customers are the joint operations we are tasked to support. Since the customer establishes value, the framework must relate our resources distinctly to operational effects. The Air Force's core competencies provide an excellent list of the service's unique functions, but the fact that they are unique keeps them from being complete. Resources cannot be cleanly divided between precision engagement and global attack. One approach puts weapons under precision engagement and platforms under global attack, but both are usually needed to engage targets, and the operational customer cannot possibly choose between them. The Air Force task list describes all the activities performed by our service. A thorough review of this list, along with application of the above characteristics, leads to a possible Air Force RAM intended to relate directly to effects-based operations. Global power is the key combat capability, the capacity to destroy or disable desired targets. Global reach is the capacity to move forces, an enabling capability for engaging targets and a primary capability for humanitarian missions. Global vigilance is the capacity to use information, an enabling capability for both reach and power, and a primary capability for deterrence. These three areas encompass the capabilities that directly contribute to operational effects. The proposed RAM also provides coverage of all the Air Force's Title 10 resources in sufficient detail. Agile combat support is the capacity to support forces, whether deployed or not. Quality people provides a category for all our people programs. Enterprise management allows insight into the resources we spend on our immense management task. Innovation and modernization group those capabilities used to transform our force and keep it viable into the future. Each of these four capability areas includes assets that deploy to support operations, along with many used only for Title 10 functions. All seven of the proposed areas need to have direct cost allocated as much as possible. For example, if hangars are needed for global attack platforms, the cost of construction and use should be captured under global attack. The cost of acquiring, operating, and maintaining the platforms and associated equipment need to be allocated as well. In addition, manpower and any specialized training attributable to global attack must be accounted for. This is the key to implementing activity-based costing. Secretary Rhodes said, "We start really hampered by the fact that there's no activity-based costing system. Accounting for costs of the products we deliver is the only way to assess their value." Once a planning framework is established, the hard part becomes determining the value of the individual capabilities. To do so, one must define the optimum capability measures and associated requirements, which necessitates defining standardized or generic effects applicable to different operational scenarios. For example, we successfully used the ton miles per day unit to help describe our ability to move material. Similarly, we need to address the number of meaningful targets per day of power. Then we must do the same for vigilance and the other capability areas. Finally, we must apply these effects to a variety of standardized operational scenarios to determine the driving requirements. Repeated use of capability measures for allocating resources will result in standards of performance, some of which we can adapt from measures already available, such as combat or C ratings for combat and support systems. We already apply C ratings to our facilities. Over time, expectations will be generated for other peacetime services as well. As standards are developed and adjusted, the process of allocating resources will become simpler. These standards will flow directly down to the major command and unit levels through the capabilities framework. The three USAFE capability groups in Spiral 2 map onto the proposed Air Force RAM. The SEP not yet addressed in USAFE Spiral 2, which must be addressed for Air Force implementation, is addition of the time dimension. Today's modernization planning process is easily adaptable to AFRAP planning. After developing capability measures and values, one can then establish near, mid, and long-term objectives. Current imbalances, the environment, and the affordability of potential solutions will drive these capability objectives. Capability options will be established and a robust set of options will be funded to ensure a reasonable level of risk. The problem we are dealing with in allocating tens of billions of dollars every year across a nearly infinite series of needs is complex. Former Air Force Chief of Staff General Larry D. Welch said, "It's all about balancing modernization, readiness, people, and infrastructure, balancing our readiness today with our readiness tomorrow." Achieving this balance requires implementation of the planning portion of AFRAP. The proposed Air Force RAM enables this implementation by providing the capabilities-based planning framework and the value of those capabilities. Finally, if the Air Force integrates strategic planning, performance management, and resource allocation through a RAM, the result would be a truly balanced scorecard approach to management. Summary and conclusion. Making the billion-dollar decisions that we need to operate efficiently and effectively in the 21st century requires three key changes in the way the Air Force does business. The first involves linking resource allocation to performance management and strategic planning. We develop the current processes without a unifying construct. Our experience shows that a management construct relating capabilities to mission-essential tasks and programs provides the needed linkage. The strategic goals align with each capability and the organizational performance measures align with each mission essential task. The second key change is to create a process that is simple, transparent, and reproducible. The new process must be simple, both to implement and to use. The problem we are dealing with in allocating tens of billions of dollars each year across a nearly infinite series of needs is complex. We can't afford to wait while sophisticated techniques for decision-making are developed. We have to get started by tackling the whole budget, not just shortfalls. To do so, we will need to use an approach based on continual improvement. Our current promotion system serves as a good example of a simple process that is subject to continual improvement. It is also transparent and reproducible. As with any new process, it was not as good as when first introduced as it is today. Over the years, improvements have made it a highly rated and fair promotion process. To be successful, a resource allocation process must also be transparent. Discussing the new DoD Management Councils for Improving Business Practices, Secretary Roach said, "We are going to be extraordinarily transparent, and so when monies are saved in one area, those monies will then be applied to another area. This is the incentive that is healthy. It's a win-win for everyone." The process has to reveal the total capability provided by every program and lay the facts on the table for all to see. By defining both the trade-ups and the trade-offs, one can establish the relative value of each choice despite a lack of perfect knowledge. Only then can we agree on what is affordable and reward people for taking cuts for the good of the service. Reproducibility, the key to the new process's survival, must be based on standards of value that can be established, reused, and improved over time. A single planning framework will help us develop the standards, record them as they are established, and clarify the links among programs and their attendant operational effects. This framework is actually a categorization scheme. Genghis Khan used a decimal system to manage his armies in groups of 10,000, called a tuman. Whomever can manage his own house well can manage an estate. Whoever can keep 10 men in order in accordance with conditions may be given 1,000 and a tuman, and he will also keep them in order. The third key change entails developing capability measures that allow Air Force decision makers to deliver the best value to the warfighter over time. General Martin, then a Lieutenant General and Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Acquisition, said, "Tying our resources to our capabilities is the single most important issue facing the Air Force today. We have shown that in order to determine value, capabilities must be related to resources on the one hand and to operational effects on the other. After these relationships are established, we can assess the value of our investments over short, mid, and long-term planning horizons. Estimating the value of capabilities and investment options will require analysis, but in the end, the proposed RAM is a tool for the decision maker, not the analyst." Our warriors can embrace this particular revolution. It is based on the fundamental principles of establishing teamwork, ensuring capability for the warfighter, and following the money. The improved decision-making that results will lead directly to real savings and increased performance by spending the resources where they are most needed. In addition to these direct savings, aligning our efforts will enhance the productivity of the entire Air Force. The biggest obstacle to motivation occurs when people don't know what is expected of them. Sun Tzu said, "He will win whose army is animated by the same spirit throughout its ranks." But when the army is restless and distrustful, trouble is sure to come. The ultimate improvement in the Air Force will come when our people can be rewarded for providing the warfighter the most bang for the buck. Conclusion: Why Airmen Must Write. As I wrote in the beginning of this book, there are many books and stories about many great deeds and leadership traits of our fellow soldiers, sailors, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen. They do have a longer history, but they also have a higher propensity to write things down. Go to the bookstore. In the history and biography sections, you will see the great number of books written by the members of our sister services. I enjoy reading and studying them, especially the ones on leadership. Airmen also have great stories to tell. We just need to take the time to write them down. As an example, I recently attended the memorial service and funeral of Captain Ryan Preston Hall. He was a 2004 ROTC graduate of the Citadel who, along with three other airmen, was killed in an aircraft accident in Africa. Ryan's father graduated from the Air Force Academy in 1970 and had served as an Air Force officer. As I stood watching his mother receive the American flag, she slowly brought her hand up to her mouth as if to muffle a faint cry of sadness. As the ceremony ended, the father came to attention and, standing there in a dark business suit, he saluted the coffin that contained the remains of his beloved son. After his squadron mates honored Ryan with a flyover, I noticed the sea of airmen dressed in blue that were there to honor their fallen comrade. In the crowd of several hundred, there were at least 100 captains and enlisted airmen who stood at attention. They all had two things in common. They were all young and all combat veterans. Their youth and the many rows of ribbons on their uniforms reminded me that fighting wars is primarily a young person's business. These young American airmen, along with their fellow soldiers, sailors, Marines, and Coast Guardsmen, are being served up hardballs by their political and military leaders and are hitting home runs time and again. They make me proud. As the years pass, their great deeds and the leadership they have demonstrated must not be forgotten. There is an old saying, "We stand on the shoulders of giants." Future generations need the wisdom and the leadership experiences of those who have served before them. Another old saying is, "A wise man learns from the mistakes of others. A fool has to learn from his own mistakes." Each of us has a responsibility to pass on to others what we have learned over the years. We have a responsibility to mentor those that come behind us. Please take the time to mentor and make a difference. Every one of us is a leader in one way or another. This has been an audio presentation of Lorenz on Leadership, Lessons on Effectively Leading People, Teams, and Organizations by General Stephen R. Lorenz, United States Air Force, retired. Published by Air University Press and the Air Force Research Institute, Air University, Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama, August 2012. And read by John Conway. Other titles from AU Press and AFRI will be available as audio presentations in the near future. Check our website at aupress.au.af.mil for additional selections.